So, Kate, today we're joined by Jason Reagan, who is based in South Korea. Fascinating conversation.
Yeah, so looking at vet in schools, really, within the International Baccalaureate.
That's right, that's right. So he's piloted this new vet training course within South Korea. He was saying, or he says in the interview, that it's the first one of its kind in South Korea, and I think he references that there's only a handful within Asia. So he's not just educating the students, but he's also educating the faculty that he works with, and he's also educating the families of the students. So he's got his hands full.
Yeah, he's got a challenge ahead, but it sounds like it's turning out to be a really successful program.
That's right, that's right. So enjoy the conversation. We certainly did. Jason Reagan has been in education for 23 years, 17 years of which has been in international baccalaureate schools. It is in this international experience that he has sparked an excitement with regards to curriculum implementation and leadership. Since 2008, Jason has been a trainer of International Baccalaureate Educators, or IB Educators, and has participated in IB Educator Network's sponsored events right throughout the world. He conducts workshops, consults with candidate schools, and serves as a visiting team leader for school visits. To date, he has participated in over 80 related events in 15 different countries. He has experience observing and providing evaluation feedback to teachers and feels that his unique personable personality allows him to relate and empathise with teachers, parents and students alike. Sit back and enjoy this fantastic conversation. Jason, thanks so much for joining us for this podcast. You've got a tremendous story. I'm really looking forward to it. So you're based in South Korea at the moment, aren't you?
I am in Incheon, South Korea. It's just close to Seoul.
Fantastic. Yep. And so you're in the middle of winter?
We are just coming out of winter. So we've had our coldest winter in almost 100 years here, apparently.
Wow.
So, yeah,
wow.
It's been pretty rough.
And how have you been? How has your school and your role coped with COVID-19?
Yeah, great question. And so I'm in a K to 12 school. So that means we're, you know, pre-tertiary. And we went to a hybrid model first and then to a fully online model. And then we've been in and out of hybrid and distance and full on campus for the last 12 months. So we're in a fortunate location where we have a lot of students who are quite well off. And so technology is not an issue, especially in general in South Korea, it's not an issue for technology.
Yeah.
So
yeah, quite advanced. Yeah. Mm. All right. Wonderful. Well, it's been a challenging year for everybody, hasn't it?
Yes, sir. It certainly has.
Mm. So let's go back. Let's reflect upon your journey of 20 plus years as an educator. What led you into the path of becoming a trainer, a teacher over the years? Well, can you reflect back on one incident or one person?
Absolutely, Lee. Thank you for asking this question. And coincidentally, I get this question often. And I would say the number one influence I had was my shop or industrial arts teacher, my manual arts teacher, when I was in high school, Todd Vandervelde. And he is still teaching after 40 plus years. And so it's impressive. I was able to catch up with him not too long ago, actually, to talk about life and how things are going. But he was one of those people that I actually saw him as a different kind of teacher. And I just saw him as a person who really valued relationships and really valued instilling skills into everything that his students did. And so I saw him handle students. I saw him handle me in the way I was a teenager. And so, you know, just to see him work with teenagers and to see how much he just truly cared for them and had such empathy for them, it really set a good example for me. And so my brother as well. In fact, my brother and I both trained to become industrial arts teachers. My brother's no longer one, but we both were am totally impressed by this particular teacher. So we were both impacted by the same person, which is, I think, quite ironic.
It's amazing, isn't it? And I suppose he didn't realize it at the time as to just how much influence he was having upon you.
He certainly didn't. In fact, I interviewed him for my own podcast talking about the same thing, just and to talk about his career. And when I told him how much he had meant to me and my brother, he actually was completely shocked. He couldn't even believe some of the stories I was telling him that he'd even forgotten, because they were impactful to me. But to him, as teachers, you know, it's often a thankless job. And so for him to have people tell him thank you was really quite heartfelt. So it was fantastic to reconnect with him. I got the chance a lot of people don't get to have. So it was great. Yes.
Yeah, great privilege, really, to be able to go back and find the gentleman. That's wonderful. For our listeners' benefit, do you just want to briefly outline how the international baccalaureate system works and how it's different to standard education?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So my school and most of the schools I've worked in are international baccalaureate schools. And so there are four programs in the international baccalaureate. They're different age ranges. And so there's the primary years program, which is, of course, for the kindergarten through, I would say, year seven, I guess you would call it, probably in many schooling situations. And then there's the middle years program, which is that 11 to 16 year old type students. And then we have two programs for the last 2 years of high school. One's called the diploma program, which is quite popular and it's been around for over 50 years. So a lot of people and educators know that program. And then we have the newest program, which is the career related program, the CP. And that's only been around for 5 years. And so it's really, really interesting to see the difference in the two programs, even though they're quite interlocked. And so the way that they work is they're built more around concepts and more around objectives and aims versus standards. And so in many cases, we have themes and we have interdisciplinary type units that we build, and the content is not dictated to us. It's more the framework and how you teach versus what you teach. And so in many IB schools, you actually still have your standard local requirements, and then the IB framework sits on top of that. And so I'm sure that you guys are familiar with the ACARA standards there in Australia. And actually, we use that at my school in Korea for the subject I teach. We actually adopted the Australian National Curriculum for what we're doing. So we're actually using those standards and benchmarks within the context of the IB programs.
Fantastic. Yeah, very interesting. So within your role within the school, so you're working in South Korea and you're a career-related program coordinator. Tell us about not only your role but also the unique program that you're a part of.
Yes, thank you so much. So in South Korea, it's a very traditional educational setting, although that is changing somewhat. In Korea, they're starting to see the need for more internationally recognized type of curriculum. But I'm actually in a fee-paying private school, an international school. And so my students are going to be different than your local public school type students in most cases. And so our school actually has all four IB programs. One thing I should have mentioned earlier is that schools can opt in or opt out of a program. So they could offer just one of the four or two of the four or whatever. And so it really is up to the school which ones they feel fit best. But our school is the only one in South Korea that has all four programs. And we're the only school with the career-related program in North Asia. And so the closest program is in Shanghai. So that's the closest school to us is actually based in China. And so we're really excited that we have this option for our students. And what we found was a lot of our students, they didn't fit the mold of students who wanted to go the traditional study route, but that they had lots of other interests and passions. And so it's not because they can't do certain things, it's because they would prefer to do something else.
Understandable.
It's really, really unique for us. And, you know, the idea of vocational ed or career-related studies in Asia in general is quite new, because a lot of people, a lot of countries, they don't have that pathway that a lot of like in Australia and New Zealand and even in, you know, Europe and in the Americas would have. And so because there's not a long history of this sort of vocational track or this career readiness sort of pathway, it's a really different approach that we're taking. And so we're actually looking at students' passions, and we're looking at the things that they're really interested in, and we're creating pathways for them that way. So they're still graduating. They're getting all the credits they need. 90-something percent of our students end up going to North America for university. And so they're going to very high-level schools. And so regardless of the program they pick, they're going into strong programs. And so we're really, really excited to have the career-related program as an option for our students, because we can offer them a really tailored pathway to their exciting passions and the things that make them really, really happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. Well, you've got to keep it relevant to the learner, don't you? So you're working with 17, 18-year-old kids as well. So yeah, it's an uphill battle as it is. So yes, good on you. It's so important. So we would recognize that, at least within Australia, as vet in schools, so vocational education training pathway in schools that then leads into adult education. So if that's not part of the culture of South Korea, then I guess you've not only been educating the students, but also the families to a certain extent, to the community.
We are educating our parents. We find that we have to do regular parent meetings with our parents, because they don't have a concept. They have no experience with this kind of education. And so for them, they immediately think that's going to make you a blue collar worker, for example, which is not what our goal is necessarily. It means that for them, they think it might give their student a disadvantage going to the university they want to go to or whatnot. So there is a lot of parent education that takes place, but the most education that has to take place is with the other teachers at the school, because in many cases they've come from systems where they were not experiencing this sort of pathway in their own school. So for them, there's bias and there's stereotype and whatnot that creep in as well. So I do find myself a little bit like a salesman, where I have to go around and sort of sell the program, but also educate everyone. And so the students actually get it. They're very, very resilient and open-minded. It's the parents, and then more importantly, the other teachers I work with. And so that's, you wouldn't think that, but that's the case. And so we do spend a lot of time talking about it. I send out normal or regular communications to the teachers, hopefully with very easy diagrams to follow and whatnot, because teachers are busy. If I can sell the college counselors and the teachers on the program, then the students and the parents they follow right along with that. And so I'm actually already talking to students in primary school, because I want them to begin thinking about what they're excited about, what their passions are. So we're targeting design and art strands and pathways with our students, but we have a very, very robust robotics program and engineering program at our school. And so I'm also trying to target those students as well. So that's showing them there that because I'm targeting them, that it's not the traditional, if they're familiar with sort of a vocational ed track, that's definitely not what they're, what they would normally see.
Okay. So really it's a fantastic position to be in, because you're right at the epicenter of something great, something fantastic, and you're helping to drive that change.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel very fortunate to do the job I do every day.
Hi, thanks so much for listening into this really interesting topic. We'll be back to it in just a moment. Our audience is growing and growing. We have now listeners in over 60 nations, which is just fantastic. But to help it to grow and continue to be heard and to be promoted via the podcast platforms, would you mind please just 1 minute of your time to jump online and to leave a review of our podcast? So just, you know, you can leave a 5-star rating, that'd be fantastic. And maybe just a really brief phrase about how you're enjoying the programs. Thanks so much. We really appreciate your support. Do you have a is there one success story that comes to mind where you look at your role, but there's one thing that you really appreciate about your role? Might be a student that you've seen graduate, or it might be just a daily experience that you're a part of.
Well, I'll tell you, Lee, actually, this is going to be our first graduating cohort in about 4 months. And so we're really, really excited. And 75% of the students who started the program will complete it, which we're really happy with that route as well. We have alternatives, of course, for students who it's just not a good fit for them. But two of the three students who are graduating from the program this year have gotten into their first choice university. And not only is it their first choice university, these are very high tiered universities, which they really, really wanted to go to. And so when they came and told me, and the excitement on their face, because they took a gamble, they were the first group to come through, and they, you know, they really did take a risk. And I really appreciated them and their families taking that chance with me and the program. And so for the two of them to come in, and one of them has nearly a full scholarship for 4 years. So we're really, really happy with the result. And so now that data is going to be an excellent point for me to share with the rest of the community, including the teachers. That they could start to see that, okay, it's not a less than program. It's not an alternative program. It's just a different program. And so that is where we're really excited. So one of my students is going to be going to NYU Film School, which is one of the best film schools in America. And the other one's going to Savannah College of Art and Design, which is SCAD, which is another one of the best art schools in the country. And so one's a public institution and one's a private institution. Okay. And they're both their first choice, which I was really, really happy with that. Because then they didn't feel like they were compromising. They were still able to get exactly what they wanted. So that was really, really special to have those conversations with them.
Yeah, brilliant, brilliant. That's so rewarding, isn't it? It really is. It's just so such a – I mean, the vet sector is so broad. But sometimes when I'm on large campuses and I'm working with large groups of faculty, even now, 20 years later, I still look in amazement at the skills in the room. And it's just wonderful, wonderful to be part of. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Now, obviously you're not South Korean. I'm going by your accent. So why not tell us about some of the countries that you've worked in over the years?
Absolutely. Thanks, Lee. And so actually, so I mentioned earlier the four IB programs. Most of my career actually was spent in that middle years program, which was the year 7 to year 11 sort of age frame. And so, and I taught design. So a lot of design thinking type things. We look at the design cycle and how we do the engineering process and that kind of thing. And so as a result, I've been able to travel to a lot of places to train teachers in using this particular framework. And so being originally from the United States, I spent over 10 years in China, where my wife is from, who's also an IB teacher. And then I spent a lot of time in, of course, Korea, but in a lot of parts in Asia. I've been to Australia numerous times with my work. And I also worked in Bermuda for a year. So that was, you get a lot of rock fever when it's only 21 square miles. But it was nice. It was nice to work there. And I did not get sucked into the triangle. So that was a problem, you know. But yeah, so I've worked officially in those places, but I've done a lot of work in dozens of countries, training other teachers, doing school inspections, and that kind of thing. And so that's been really rewarding as well, to have those opportunities that I probably would not have had in any other profession, to be able to go and to see how educational programs are being run in Singapore or in, Mongolia or in Asia or in Europe. So it's really been great to have those opportunities to travel as a result of something I love doing. So that's been great. And I've really enjoyed doing that over my 20 plus year career.
Yeah. Fantastic. I haven't traveled as much as you by the sounds of things, which is great. It's a fantastic story. But in my travels, when I do find myself in these fortunate positions to be working in other countries, I always find it very interesting to compare how different nations teach cohorts. You would have found that in your experience?
Absolutely. Yeah. I spent a lot of time in China and in Chinese schools, going around and seeing things. And of course, being married to a person who was educated in China, we have daily conversations about the difference. And so it's been great to see that. But even in the US, when I did a lot of traveling there, even from state to state or even urban to suburban to rural was amazing, the difference. And also, it tells you what that community's priorities are by how they teach. And so I noticed that when I would go to a school in India, for example, and there's 40 people hovered around one bandsaw looking at how one person's doing it. And it made me think, wow, you know, even in a situation where not everybody has everything they need, and a probably quite unsafe situation to be quite honest, they were so thirsty for the knowledge that the balance of whether it's safe or whether I'm getting the knowledge, there was no question. And so I have seen a lot of different ways to teach. That's one thing that's great about the IB is that framework is the same, even though the curriculum and the context is different. And so to see the way that they use the inquiry-based, project-based type teaching, it's really exciting to see that, especially in schools in countries where that's not been the tradition, to see how they've made changes and really worked hard to make changes in their practice and their pedagogy.
Yeah, fantastic. There is you're right. There is an enormous thirst for knowledge in developing nations, isn't there? There's just a genuine desire to learn and learn as much as I can, as quickly as I can. It's it's in a way, it's quite easy to teach.
Absolutely. They're very thirsty for that information and that knowledge.
It's great. Great to share. So from what I know of you, Jason, you're a real advocate for lifelong learning. Obviously, that's the case, even just in what you've spoken about there. How can an individual, and I think it's really important that we all remain committed to the learning journey. You know, if we expect our students to continually learn every day, I'm always a believer that that's the same yardstick for me, is that I should continually try and learn something new every day myself. So what are your thoughts on that? And if someone's struggling out there who is an educator and they're thinking, where do I start? I've been doing this for years. Not necessarily closed-minded, but have you got any tips about how you maintain your skills and knowledge with regards to education?
That's a really great question, Lee. Thank you for that. And I would say, I mentioned earlier, I travel a lot. I used to, anyway, before we couldn't travel.
Sure.
But I traveled a lot with the IB, training other teachers. And actually going into schools and working with schools on sort of authorization and accreditation type visits, those were the kinds of things that were incredibly gratifying. And I learned so much through that. I would say, though, during COVID, I'm a natural, inquisitively curious person. And so during COVID, I've spent a lot of time indoors and trying to learn new skills and whatnot. And so for me, I'm sure along probably your lines as well, I picked up doing podcasting again and that kind of thing. And just having conversations with people I respect and new people has been the best professional development I could possibly have, because I was just thirsty for those daily interactions at work. And so by not having it or having it sporadically, then having these conversations with people who I really look up to or want to know more about or want to learn more about, that has been the number one best way to learn for me, because they tell me a new book I need to read, or they tell me about a new website, or they talk about an article. And then I leave those conversations and I go and I try those things out. I give it a go. And so I think that's been my number one thing. Also, just reading books that are interesting to me. I highly, highly, highly recommend a book by Todd Rose, which would go great with anyone listening, called Dark Horse. And it's all about how people break the standardized way of education and they go their own path looking for fulfillment. And it is fantastic. And I cannot recommend it enough. And I've been reading it, and I'll read a little bit and then I'll do some more research, and then I'll read a little bit more and then I'll do some more research. So it's great. It's his follow-up book to a book that he wrote earlier called The End of Average. And it's all about how looking at averages of people, especially, is not a good way to do things. There's a TED talk about it. I highly recommend anybody going and watching that 15 minutes. It's very, very worthwhile. And he does, that's his whole career has been out of doing research about individuality and how we find fulfillment. And it's really, really good. And so I would say that's been the number one thing over the last 8 or 10 months. I've been taking my time enjoying the read, and that's been so rewarding for me to just read through that and then just walk away and digest it a bit and do some of my own research and then come back to it. So, you know, I wish I had more. I do. I also fly drones, and so that's another thing that I do. I just take the drone up, practice some techniques, but I haven't been able to do that much. And so it's been more of just at the moment, a lot of just some personal sort of reflection, I think you could say, and looking at my practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know about everyone else listening in, but I've written down both those titles. So that's where I'll be going after this conversation. So thanks for sharing that with us. It's really important. I find even just observing another person's classroom, even if even if you don't have the vocational skills of what they're teaching, as an example, but you're just watching their teaching technique, I find that to be quite rewarding, like a peer-to-peer program. And that's relatively easy, you know, if you just sit in the back corner for an hour and observe someone else in their professional practice. So anything that can assist us with regards to maintaining and sort of challenging where we are as professionals, I think is worthwhile. Wonderful. What about training room coaching? So for me and for our business, we do quite a lot of training room coaching. Over 23 years, you know, you're quite senior now as an educator. Have you been involved with that role with mentoring and supporting new teachers, new instructors in the classroom?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And so our institution actually supports lots and lots of new teachers to the profession. And so we see ourselves as a teaching institution. And so we have lots of Korean teachers come and take part to see how differently we do teaching. So I have had the opportunity to work with them on a small basis, but I've also, we have a very robust internship program for new teachers. And so new to the profession teachers straight out of education, bachelor's degrees or whatnot, are coming up and they're spending a year. We'll pay them enough to live on and we give them housing and whatnot. And they just learn from master teachers and they take a part. So I've had numerous opportunities to work with teachers in that capacity. More importantly, you know, they have to really want to teach what we're teaching in design in order to do that. And so it was great to learn from them as well, because in many cases, these are people who were young enough to be my own children in some in some way, shape, or form. And so they're bringing a certain zest and zeal to what they're doing. And so I learned all about biomimicry, and I've learned about all these different things that, quite frankly, I might not have brought into my classroom any other way. And so it's been really, really rewarding. I think sometimes I get more out of it than they do because I learn so much from their new ways of thinking and whatnot. So yeah, absolutely. I've worked with them. In many cases, they have the knowledge. They just need the practice and they need the feedback. And so I've really become quite a, I've instilled a lot of feedback into these folks and really become quite an expert in giving good feedback other than that's good, but actually giving actionable feedback.
Yes, exactly.
Specific and measurable, right? And so that's been great. And again, it goes back to, it's a really, really great way to professionally develop me. And on a different scale, I mentioned I travel a lot doing workshops and whatnot with the International Baccalaureate. I actually work in a capacity called a field representative. So when we run workshops, I actually go and observe the actual workshop leaders to make sure kind of quality control, to make sure that they're giving out the proper message and whatnot, but more importantly, to look at how engaging they're being. And what we do is we often use the feedback from that to identify new leaders within the organization. And so we have a rubric called, I love the name of it. It's called Educator Capabilities is what they call it. And it's a 9 or 10 category rubric, and we go through, and I'm able to actually have really great conversations with very seasoned people about their practice. And because, you know, working with adults is very different than working with kids. So to have those conversations with adults, and teachers know everything, and so it's really hard to tell them something different. So
that's exactly where I was going with my next point. It's a really, look, I tell you, professional development, as you, as in formal sessions to faculty members, is hardcore business, you know. But I find coaching, people are really open to it because you're already recognizing their skills, you're celebrating their skills, you're not talking at them. You're able to transfer the knowledge immediately into their practice. And so it's much more of a trusting relationship that takes place. Like you're saying, in many ways, it's a two-way street. The feedback is obviously got to be really specific and encouraging, and I often find myself acting it out. You know, so I've watched their, I've watched an hour of their delivery, and later on, I'm walking around the classroom mimicking them. as I'm demonstrating. Maybe if we just change this a little bit right here, and they can catch it straight away. So I find that really good because also it's independent feedback often, and because, you know, I don't have any political connection with the organisations that I work with. But I think getting back to your first point, I think it's really important is and it's so good to hear that, you know, you have a 12-month robust program because I remember my first manager said to me, it'll take you 2 years before you can teach independently and effectively. And in many ways, I think he was right. You know, before I felt really comfortable and flexible and able to change my delivery for different cohorts, I think it did take 2 years. So it's great to see that there's that such a support program in place for new teachers. Good on you. If a new trainer, a new teacher was to ask you one piece of advice, and that's going to be really hard because as an educator you want to give, you know, a dozen.
Give them everything, that's right.
But let's say they're asking one piece of wisdom from you. What would you say?
Sure. Well, I've had this question before and I think I'm going to give you the same answer I almost always do, and that is you have to hang in there, be flexible, and the main thing is that you will get through this. Because in many cases, people are asking this question because they're questioning their decision to become a teacher. And so I don't know about in many other places, but in the U.S., 50% of the teachers leave the field after before 3 years or right around three years. And so there's a huge attrition. And so the advice I've often had to give is once you make it past this particular point, you will be fine. You know, and in many cases, they do thrive once they're able to get those few years under their belt. Just learning how a system works. I've often heard that a new principal, it can take 7 years for them to build culture in one organization. And so if that's the case, imagine how long it's going to take a teacher to build their own legacy or their own time in an institution. And so that's the number one thing I would tell someone is that, you know, hang in there. You know, you're going to have a rough ride to begin with in many cases, but it's very rewarding. And remember why you went into education in the first place, I think is probably the other thing I would tell them.
It's hardcore, isn't it? You know, teaching is not easy. It's taken for granted, I think, in many cultures, but it's a difficult gig day in, day out. So people need to be respected and supported in those roles that we occupy. 2020 presented some real challenges for all training organisations right throughout the world. In Australia, in many ways, we've been quite fortunate and we're blessed in that respect. A number of changes have taken place. Probably some of the things like peer collaboration is much more evident today. We've had the technology for many years in relation to flexible delivery. To some extent, credibility of flexible delivery has been questioned, but now everyone is using flexible delivery with technology and, you know, Skype and alike and, you know, all sorts of learning management systems in place and alike, which is great. What do you see will be sustained into the future? Will some of those things be sustained, some of those changes that have been forced upon us?
I would hope so. I think that it's forced a lot of people outside of their comfort zone. very, very, very quickly out of a need, not out of a want. And so I do think that I think there were teachers probably in most schools that were doing flipped classroom type activities prior to this. And very often, I like you said, I love how you said that, that they didn't have the credibility thinking that it was kind of the maybe they were not working as hard or that they were kind of going out on the cheap kind of thing. And so I think everyone realizes now online universities and whatnot, they're the real deal because you're still doing all the work. In fact, that Zoom fatigue and everything else is it's true. I will say, though, the discussion, even in my own institution, is when we're back to full on full campus all the time, we may schedule asynchronous days once a month just so teachers can come and train. You know, so I think there are things around this and or just give kids a break from school because, you know, I think that there are ways that we do need to there's things we need to keep. I also think that there's things we need to get rid of. And so that's an important one as well. It's forced tech companies to meet make very quick changes and pivots in what they're doing. And so I've seen tremendous improvement in our learning management system and whatnot. And so I do think that schools will be much more tied to their learning management system in the future. And I think that they're going to look for ways for those results that students have and their portfolios and whatnot to move with them throughout their educational journey. Because it's quite hard. It was quite hard before all of this to kind of track sometimes some how students went. And so this is a great way for them to show their evidence. And I'll tell you, you know, in the U.S., it's forced our universities to ask the question, do we really need standardized test scores? Do we really need the SAT, for example? And so the two students I mentioned to you earlier didn't even have to send their SAT scores to those big universities. Their portfolio of work is what went with their application. And so, in fact, I was told later by the admissions person, by one of the students, that the power and the strength of their portfolio is why they pick that student. And so I think that's going to change. And I think for not only vocational ed and, you know, work-based and career-based studies, but I think across the board, the power of portfolios are going to be even more pronounced as we move forward.
I think that's a podcast episode in itself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
The importance of portfolio evidence because it's so transferable. You're right. And so you're already across it and moving forward with it, obviously, with the evidence that's supported those pathways for those students. It's wonderful. So I think you're on the money there. Now, we met via the following. Approach me with regards to the DNA Podcast Network, which is a fantastic concept. I'm surprised no one's thought of it previously. Why don't you tell us about it? It's a great concept. Oh, man.
I don't know. How much time have you got, Lee? Because we might be here a while. So as I mentioned, I think earlier, during the lockdown, I've really kind of picked up doing podcasting again, which actually before I was a teacher, I was in radio and television. And so this is actually, I'm going back to my roots in a sense. And so I felt, and also teachers were sending me messages saying, how can I get professional development while we're locked down? And I thought, well, I'll just have conversations with experts and put it out there and people can listen. And so that's kind of what started this. And one of the people I talked to, I have to say his name, Ivo Hanan, he's in Dubai. He was doing something else. He was doing a live stream with educators on YouTube and he was doing this and that. And so he and I connected through a mutual colleague. And on that episode a year ago, actually, he and I decided on the episode that we were going to create a design alliance. And the idea was that we thought it would be great to connect design educators with designers. Like the whole passion there was, let's pull out who the industrial designers are and who the shoe designers are and who all these other people are, and let's put them in the path of teachers, and because their students are only going to benefit, and those are going to be their future coworkers and their future employees. Mm-hmm. And so we developed this thing called the Design Network Alliance. And that's been kind of kicking around for 6 or 8 months. And we'll have, you know, a meeting once a month and we'll do this and that. And then I just one morning woke up thinking, oh my gosh, why don't I just put together a Google site with like-minded type podcast and call it the DNA Podcast Network. And so thank you for accepting my invitation. And as I've found websites that I feel fall within the spirit of the Design Network Alliance, we felt that we want to include them there because it's not competition, it's collaboration. And so that's what we're trying to do. And I think it's starting. And so for me, it's a chance to expose my professional learning network to what I'm listening to and to what yes. other people are into. And so everyone has their own kind of slant or stick, but in the end, we all have the same mission, which is to just make our community stronger and to continue to enhance what we already have by helping each other. And so that's what this is about. And so I'm really excited. It started to really take off. There's a lot of interest in the network.
All power to you. That's fantastic. Why don't you share the website with us?
Absolutely. Thank you. And so it's www.dnapodcastnetwork.ga. And I'm sure that I can send you the link and whatnot, but it's just a Google site and we just plopped it up there. And all you do is just click on the thumbnail that you're interested in. There's a little blurb there for each one. And they're all different things. So we have some VR and AR type podcast. And then we also have some podcasts that just talk about STEM and STEAM education. So we're trying to build it out and to get exposure because there's not a lot of these type of podcasts out there.
Jason, it's been fantastic to catch up with you. you're such an interesting person. You're obviously quite an inquisitive person. So yes, in many sir. Ways, I relate to that.
Yes, sir.
So I wish you every success over Thank there so in much. South Korea, and
yes,
you've got a job on your hands educating not just the students but the community as well. So good Correct. Luck with it and those teachers.
Absolutely. And I think I want to close by saying go Magpies, right?
Footy season's almost started.
It's just about started. Thanks so much. I appreciate
Take
it.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for continuing to be a part of our growing audience, which is now heard across 60 nations. It's just fantastic to have you with us. Can we please remind you just to take a quick moment also to review our website, which is www.transformationconsultancy.com. In particular, look at our store if you require any further support, because in our store we offer books, we offer templates, we offer online courses, remote training in your training room so you can film your delivery and we can provide you feedback. We've done it to hundreds of people over the years, and so much more. So thanks again for being a part of our growing community, and we wish you every success.